that's right. We're right here this afternoon, and I have Rock Swindler. He's president and owner of Southeast Insurance Group Insurance, and he's been doing insurance for over 15 years, and he established his insurance company, Southeast Insurance Group, back in 2004. And guess what, folks? He just celebrated his 10th anniversary. That's pretty good for a small business, Rock.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So how you've been doing this, and one of the reasons we wanted to have you on is it's been very difficult to find somebody willing to talk about this whole Affordable Care Act. And I understand that you have studied up on this, and you know a lot about the ins and outs of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, we know a little bit about it. I'd be dishonest if I said I've read all 6,000 pages of the legislation or that I understood all 6,000 pages, but we have made it a very big effort for our agency and our company but to learn as much as we possibly could so that we could provide good advice to our clients and the agents that we work with.
Now, what exactly does your insurance company do?
We're an employee benefits agency. Our primary focus is to provide consulting for other agents and agencies. We look to provide education, training, and basically solutions for agencies. So when they're looking for a product or a service, they can come to us and we can locate that product or service for them at the best price. Products, services such as technology solutions, enrollment support, and non-insurance products like flexible spending accounts and those type things.
Now, what exactly, how has the Affordable Care Act impacted your business as an insurance agent?
Well, this is the most broad-reaching piece of legislation passed probably since the New Deal. So it's impacted...
That was a long time ago, Rock.
Very long time ago. And it is impacting, you know, not just our industry, but our entire country. So it's more of a question of what has it not impacted. It's obviously caused us to have to do a tremendous amount of education, research. We've had to do compliance classes for federal government and the state government. So it's been a long 4 years for our industry in order to adapt to a changing environment.
From the insurance agency's perspective, this can't have been a good thing.
Well, I will say no. To the past 4 years have been very much like torture.
But we're
finally seeing coming to the end of it. I guess one of the things that's really frustrating is every time we think we understand the law, they change it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so we are having to constantly adapt. Now, with that being said, where there is change and where there is chaos, there is opportunity. So we're trying to look at the positive aspect of things. By us being on the forefront of education and understanding of this law, then we think we've become very valuable to the agents that we support, to their groups, to our end-user clients. And so because of that, we do think we are creating opportunity and value for what we're doing as an agency.
And what do you think has been the best parts of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, they did get a few things right with the law, and I think one of the main things that they did is now coverage is guaranteed issue for all individuals. Anyone who would like to enroll in health insurance coverage now has that opportunity, no questions asked.
They also have the penalty if they don't enroll too, don't they?
That certainly is true.
Yeah.
You know, I would consider that somewhat of a negative, that there is an individual mandate requiring someone to have insurance, but the guaranteed issue aspect of it and the fact that it does cover pre-existing conditions, that pre-existing conditions can no longer be excluded, are a couple of the positives that come out of the law.
Okay. And I know I was talking to you before we went on the air, and I asked you, and I wanted one of the positives, one of the big positives, and one of the big negatives, and you said, that would be hard to give me just one negative, but what do you think is the biggest negative
for the public,
for people, for individuals?
Sure. For the large majority of people, what this law really did fail is in the affordability aspect of the law. And there's a small percentage of the population that is going to be able to receive subsidies to help purchase their health insurance. And for that small segment of the population, it's going to be a good thing for them. But for the overwhelming majority of the population, the law is going to increase health insurance cost. And that is a very big negative. So when to call this the Affordable Care Act, I think, is a little bit of a misnomer, is that it did not really make health insurance more affordable for the majority of people.
Now, and the thing about it, it's not just going to be a little more expensive. I've seen some of the figures that they're looking at. It's going to be a lot more expensive. I mean, you look at it for an individual. I was looking over some of your PowerPoint presentation. You're talking about a big change for a family of four or for an individual. Big changes.
Yeah, potentially. And a lot of the changes, and this is something that I encourage everyone before they make a snap judgment about the law, to investigate, to find out specifically how it affects and impacts them from a financial standpoint. And I'm not to say that you should change your political view because this law either saves you money or costs you more money. You know, that's not going to do that. But I think everyone should actually investigate their actual cost and how it affects them personally. And for some folks, they will see a decrease based off of their demographics. You know, for example, one other part of this law no longer allows you to rate based off of gender. Traditionally, female rates were higher than male rates. They have been as long as I've been in this industry. Now the insurance carriers can no longer rate based off of gender. So,
well, I mean, that's why we have to have birth control pills to, you know, have access to birth control, whether we're 25 or 65, right?
Well, that is the case, and you have to be covered for maternity benefits. So if you're an 18-year-old male, you're going to have maternity benefits as part of your plan, whether you want it or need it or not.
But. Okay, and so therefore that becomes something new to deal with here.
Well, absolutely. But for the 18-year-old male, your rate is increasing. For the 18-year-old female, your rate may have actually decreased a little bit.
Sure. So these are some of the things that we are going to get into here this afternoon. We're going to be talking about a lot of this. If you have a question for Rock Swindler, please give us a call. He is the president and owner of Southeast Insurance Group out of Columbia, and he has made a practice of trying to understand as much as one human being can possibly understand about the affordable health care. I told you this was a good one here, so don't you go away. Give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right, we're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. And we are here with Rock Swindler. Don't be afraid of his name, folks. We had a little fun with that one. Yes, he's an insurance agent, and his last name is Swindler. I don't know. How did he get that one? I actually had some very good friends up here whose last name was Swindler, and so it's interesting to see that. But okay. I bet you get a lot of jokes about that as an insurance agent, don't you?
Definitely. Lots of jokes about that, and just had to embrace it over the years. And I will say at least it's a memorable last name, so people generally remember me whenever they hear that. And as I generally start my presentations at group meetings, I'll say I'm giving you all a joke that you can go out and share with someone at lunch. You met with the insurance representative named Swindler. And as I told you, you can also share with them what my wife does for a living if you want to add some
she's
extra humor.
She's an attorney, folks. She said, no way am I taking your last name. I don't blame her. Boy, that's pretty tough. Well, we've already had some questions coming in, and of course that's what Rock said. He would be happy to answer questions here this afternoon. But 229-7984, 229-7984 if you want to call us. Beth gave us a call. She says, we have a melded family, and so far we have only been able to get the children with my husband's name covered. And it's been 9 weeks of exasperation. I know somebody who is actually Mick Mulvaney, who is a representative in over in Rock Hill. He has triplets, three boys. They have not been able to get all three boys covered because they all have the same birth date. Now, they all have different names, but they've had a real problem trying to insure three triplets. Two have, one hasn't been able to be insured. So what is happening with this?
Well, I think all of these are a function of the website and the entire system just not functioning properly. And it's been a disaster. I think from anyone's perspective, it's been a disaster. Obviously, the administration admitted that by extending the open enrollment through March 31st. And then, you know, they actually
gave you a little more time.
Gave you a little more time on top of that. They really extended it to April 15th. And in our industry, we were, as of March 31st, we were very curious as to how they were going to extend this. And what we came to find out is basically if you went to the website and then you saw that open enrollment was closed and still clicked the link to elect to enroll, then according to the administration, you were making the decision that you had attempted to enroll prior to March 31st and had been unsuccessful.
Sure.
And so they were opening up through April 15th. But, you know, all of these are just a function of the website and really the entire system just not working cohesively to meet the needs of the people that are trying to enroll. And there's been, I mean, I can't even name all the situations that we've encountered where there have been people who are really attempting to enroll but have not been able to for some reason or another because their circumstance doesn't match up with what the system is looking for.
Sure. So these are going to be issues, and they're still going to continue. But you do worry about particularly families with children because kids get in accidents, things sure. happen, sports. I mean, you know, you're going to see this type of thing. And when you've got teenagers, you've got a double whammy, I think, there, particularly as they start driving and all this kind of stuff happens. So these are some of the things, I think, that really bother families.
Well, and one of the big aspects, and this kind of plays along with the question, is that as a lot of folks were going through the website and they would put in their information, they would get a message back that the parents could enroll, but that the children should be covered by Medicaid. And whenever they received that message, it would not allow them to enroll the children through the healthcare.gov and receive a subsidy for the children. Well, a lot of these parents had already known that they were not eligible for Medicaid. Their children were not eligible for Medicaid. But they were put in a situation where they were having to take this eligibility notice from the federal facilitated marketplace and take that to the South Carolina Medicaid office to get a rejection letter from Medicaid so that they could go back into the system again and then attempt to enroll the kids. And again, a very difficult situation. You can imagine, you took something that was supposed to be easy for someone to enroll and made it exponentially more difficult.
Well, all I want to say is that when Catherine Sebelius did her letter of resignation when she was giving her speech and she didn't even have page two, that should have told us something right there. Yeah, I mean, you know, that was not to be hard, but that was pretty unbelievable that she didn't have her notes correct.
Sure.
But other things that are problems on the health care, the penalties. Now, the penalties don't look too severe for this year if you don't get insurance. Mm-hmm. Like they are what?
It's 1% of household income or $95, whichever's greater.
Whichever's greater.
Whichever's greater. So if
you think it should be whichever's lesser. There you go. I think that's what it should be. Whatever's greater. Okay. So if and then next year, what happens?
It goes up to 2% next year, culminating in 2016, where it'll be 2.5% of family of household income, or $695, whichever is greater. And there is some additional fees for the children for dependents, so it could be a little bit more than that. But the main thing is this year it's 1% of household income, 2% next year, and then 2.5% in 2016.
Wow. So while it's not bad for this year, it really is going to make a difference next year and the year after, which I guess the idea is to get people, force them into this. Now, what happens to private insurance?
Well, you know, that's one of the big misconceptions about Obamacare that a lot of people hear. They think it's an entity into itself. There's still private insurance, and in fact, you know, all insurance is still private insurance. So when you go to the federal facilitated marketplace and attempt to enroll in Obamacare, you really are still enrolling in private insurance. In South Carolina, there are four carriers that are available on the federal facilitated marketplace. There's Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Blue Choice, Coventry, which is owned by Aetna, and Consumers Choice. And all four of those are privately owned insurance companies. So if you do go to the federal facilitated marketplace and enroll, you are still enrolling in private insurance. So there is, other than Medicaid and Medicare and TRICARE, there is no government insurance. The Affordable Care Act and Obamacare is just, it's a mechanism for enrolling in private insurance.
So insurance companies they've had to change, though, a lot of their policies to meet what the federal government wanted.
Absolutely. I mean, it should, instead of being called, what the Affordable Care Act is regulation on the health insurance industry. The Affordable Care Act has said what insurance carriers have to cover as far as all the procedures. It said how much they can charge and how much they can profit. And it's told us as individuals or employers what we have to offer, the type of policies. We're going to be penalized or fined if we don't go along with that. So it's just a really high level of regulation on the industry.
And as insurance agents, and what is the general perception amongst the insurance industry itself about this?
Well, I think for the large part, everyone does not like it. I think, as I described to you in one of our conversations, it's been like torture. And for us to have to go through all of, because it's not just regulation on the insurance companies, it's in regulation on the agents and the agencies as well.
So that means that, and as far as where we're going on this, is insurance going to be transferable from one state to another?
Well, I don't think so at this moment, because with the Affordable Care Act, open enrollment did end as of April 15th now, finally, as it's been 6.5 months of open enrollment and website glitches and problems. But you can still enroll in the Affordable Care Act if you have a qualifying event or it creates what's called a special enrollment period. So if you were to lose your job or lose your insurance, you could enroll. If you had a child or if you were divorced, you can have a special enrollment period to enroll. And moving states is one of those special enrollment periods. So if someone moves from South Carolina to Kentucky, when they get to Kentucky, that creates a special enrollment period for them to enroll in the Kentucky exchange as opposed to enrolling in the South Carolina exchange.
But number one, would the cost of the insurance in Kentucky be the same as the cost in South Carolina if they had the same type of policy, the bronze level policy, for example?
No. And one of the things that the Affordable Care Act still allows is for insurance carriers to rate based off of zip code. And so even within the state of South Carolina, you can see a rate discrepancy based off where you live and what your zip code is.
Now, these insurance, in fact, we're going to have to hear South Carolina news, but one of the things we're going to get into is talking about if you're in one group, does that allow you to go to any hospital in South Carolina, or will you be confined based on what policy that you have?
No, that's a great question, and that's one of the aspects of the Affordable Care Act that has not been discussed or a lot of the media have really not picked up on it to this point.
So we come back, we're going to talk about that. So don't you go away. Hey, if you got a question, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe Cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. I tell you what, we've been having a fast and furious conversation right here. That's right. Hey, I'm with Rock Swindler this afternoon. He is president and owner of Southeast Insurance Group. He does do, they do counseling, and they look at things and help people with groups and whatnot to try to provide them expanded array of products and services. So he's pretty familiar about what's going on, and it's hard to figure out what to talk about on the air here, because there's so much. But one of the things that we were going to before we went off the air to hear the news was the question about, what was the question about?
I think we're talking about network access, and were people that enrolled in the Affordable Care Act going to have as many options for providers
exactly.
as they were before? And the short answer to that is no. One of the things that is occurring in nationally as well as very specifically in our state is that carriers are going to what we're referring to in the industry as skinny networks. And what they're having to do is, because of the regulation of the federal government on the health insurance providers, you know, the federal government has stepped in and told them how much they can make as far as profit, then they've had to go back to the providers, I mean the hospitals and the doctors, to renegotiate contracts. And in many of the instances, if the doctors and the hospitals are not able to offer services for the price that they're willing to pay, then they are not contracting them as network providers. And so the networks are shrinking. And with Coventry, who is one of the four carriers that is on the South Carolina Exchange, the federal facilitated marketplace, they have five different networks for their individual products being offered in South Carolina. And in some cases, they're a network that only cover one county.
Wow.
And they are really, really only doing business with the hospitals and the physicians that they can really get the best deals out of. And it's a necessary aspect of this law that really has not been promoted. So anyone out there who has signed up for coverage with any of the providers that are through the South Carolina Exchange, you know, our cautionary tale is just make sure whenever you're calling in or before you go to see a doctor, before you schedule a procedure at the hospital, to make sure that they are a preferred provider for that carrier that you're enrolled with.
So here's the thing. You're in a car accident. You're the ambulance is taking you to the hospital. You need to be aware enough to call the hospital and say, I'm coming here. Do you take my insurance?
No, not exactly. Now, all of the carriers will still provide in-network service for emergency services. So
okay.
If you're in a car wreck or you have a heart attack or you have some type of emergency service, then you're going to be covered for that procedure. But there can be some gray area between what is considered an emergency and what is not. You know, if your kid falls and breaks their arm and you just take them to the nearest facility, then that could be a question of whether that was an emergency or not. And if they are a non-preferred provider, then that procedure could be denied.
Could be denied by your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So you've got... And it used to be an insurance, like Blue Cross Blue Shield. They had deals with everybody across the state, didn't they?
That's correct. Just, you know, a few years back, Blue Cross had 100% of the hospitals. I believe the statistics were they had 96% of the primary care physicians and 92% of the specialists. So if you had Blue Cross, you were basically covered wherever you went in the state of South Carolina. And I don't have the statistics on that, but I don't believe that is the case anymore. I do believe that there are hospitals that are no longer in the network for the Blue Cross Blue Shield individual exchange plans.
So this is something they're not talking about very much. But so when you make this decision and when you're looking at this, is there a way to tell what things are going to be covered, what hospitals or what doctors are going to be in there? Because, you know, one of the big things they have actually promoted is if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And we all found out that's not necessarily true, because does this, what this refers to is these skinny networks that your doctor may not prescribe to the network that this insurance company that is covering you.
That's exactly correct. And, you know, if you are going through the federal facilitated marketplace, they do have links where you can check your provider to see if they are in network. But those change very frequently. If we remember not too long ago, if we enrolled in health insurance, we used to get this big, thick paper book that showed all the doctors and hospitals that were accepted by that insurance carrier. Well, the insurance carriers quit providing those, and they were only available online now because they change so frequently. So if there's a contract dispute between a hospital or between a physician, they may not, they could be in network 1 month and out of network the next month. So it is important to pay attention to that on an ongoing basis, not just when you're enrolling, but when you actually need those services. It would be wise to continue to stay up to date on that.
Wow. So this is a consequence of the Affordable Care Act.
Absolutely.
So you've got to check. You've got to be aware. Now, one of the other things, of course, that you hear these horror stories about people that have very expensive medications, and all of a sudden some of these are not being covered anymore. What is the case with medications today?
Well, that's a great question as well. And, you know, what has happened as part of the Affordable Care Act, as we talked about, that the regulation of the federal government came in and said, well, if you're going to offer a plan, it's got to meet these essential benefits. And that's a term that we've all becoming very familiar with, is essential benefits. So the plans all have to cover ambulance, hospitalization, pharmacy, physician's visits, you know, all of these things. Wellness, those are all covered. And they applied what's called a minimum value, and it's an actuarial value to each plan to determine on average what the insurer's cost would be and what the individual enrolling in that plan would be as far as how much they would pay out of pocket as they incurred services. So they basically went to the health insurance carriers and mandated what they had to cover and how much they had to cover. And so all of the health insurance carriers had to use this formula to build their plans out so that they met these federal guidelines. Well, what a lot of the plans did is that they either cut back on the prescription benefits. So instead of those prescriptions being covered under a copay, which a lot of people are used to, those prescription costs now apply to the deductibles. So if you had been, had a plan previously where you paid a copay for your prescription plan and it now applies to the deductible, where you may have been paying a $35 or $50 or $100 a month copay, but that drug actually cost $400, and now that $400 applies to your deductible and you've got a $6,000 deductible, or to be more exact, $6,350, which is the maximum allowed under a bronze plan, then now that $400, you're absorbing the full cost of that. And, you know, what happens,
so when you go to the pick up your pharmacy, you're going to pay the whole amount until you've paid $6,350.
That's correct. And what happened is a lot of people, what we tend to do as consumers of health insurance, when we're looking at the plan that we're selecting, a lot of times we only look at the deductible. Or we look at this very small part of the plan, and there's a lot more to your health insurance than that. There's these copays, there's deductibles, there's maximum out-of-pocket expense, and it's important to kind of look at the whole thing. So as a lot of people, as they were going through online, especially the people who qualified for a subsidy and may have had actually a low premium, they would look at the premium cost and they would look at the deductible, or they look at the premium cost and just look at the physician's copay.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you may have a plan that has a $15 copay for the doctor's office for your primary care physician, but all of your prescription medication applies to the deductible.
So you're going to have to pay that $6,000 worth of
before that. You get any prescription benefits.
Now, the effect that has to be happening to people that are enrolled in this has to be very hurtful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
well, and it's a, you know, and some of it comes down to just a lack of understanding and a lack of education about the process. And that's one of the things from our standpoint, from the industry standpoint, is there's been very little education of the American public. You know, my pastor even mentioned Sunday in church. If you want to get people talking, and then show up at the local coffee shop and ask them what they think about the Affordable Care Act. And everybody will share their opinion with you. But in most cases, people are just making their opinion based off of their political spectrum, and they don't really understand how the law affects them at this point. Or they haven't investigated and educated themselves up enough to understand the consequences and the effect that it'll have on them. All of the information that we've received, the large majority of the information that we received from the media, has been slanted either one way or the other.
Sure.
Either people are really pushing for it or people are really pushing against it. And so,
well, for example, the boy in the slippers, in the onesie for the advertising to get health care, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, we got those commercials, and then, of course, we've got the other side of it, and it just keeps going on
absolutely.
And on.
Absolutely. And there's a vacuum of intelligent education and information that we people have just not gotten. They've gotten the horror stories on one side, and they've gotten the fluff and the pomp on the other side. And in the middle is usually where the truth lies, and that's what the American people have not had so far.
Why is it so difficult to get that out there? I mean, I've asked many insurance people to come and talk to us. You're the first one that actually has been willing to sit down and talk about this.
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I can't give an answer as to why other people are not willing to talk about it. You know, that's something that we absolutely are, and what we're trying to do for the agents that we support, you know, in the products that we market and support, is to find accurate information to support, you know, these products. And, you know, unfortunately, there's just not a lot out there in the media right now from what you're seeing on television and commercials and those things. And of course, that's where all of us glean most of our information from.
Sure.
You know, are those that there's just still such a political agenda. One comment that I did hear, and this was from Ezra Klein at a speaking engagement of the Washington Post last year, is that he said in most cases political fights are over once the law is passed. That people, they argue.
We haven't seen this in this one now, have we?
Not at all. That's what's made this so drastically different, is that usually there's a fight, everybody takes sides, and then once the law is passed, everybody kind of comes together and accepts it. This law has been passed, and everyone has continued the political battle. They've continued the fight.
Well,
it's going to go right into the November elections. It's going to be probably the number one topic in all the debates coming up for the November elections. And I would anticipate, you know, 2 years down the road at the next presidential election, it's going to be the hot topic then still.
Well, don't you think if instead of passing the law, like Nancy Pelosi said, we've got to pass the law to read it, if they'd read it first, maybe we would have ended up with something a whole lot better.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And, you know, I think maybe that's the answer to to Ezra Klein's observation as to why is there continued to be so much political infighting over this law. I think it goes down to the way that the law was passed, and that it was really passed in non-traditional channels as
they pushed it
through with really lacking the votes to put it through. So because of the way it was brought into being, has continued the fight over it.
Sure. Listen, we're here with Rock Swindler. He is president and owner of Southeast Insurance Group. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. I want to talk a little bit about the idea of free market and why is the government involved in insurance and regulation? I can't believe the insurance companies actually let this happen. Hey, don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
That's right. We're right back here. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. I hope you're enjoying getting some valuable experience information here that'll help you make a decision if you haven't made that decision or if you're still holding out to make that decision. I hope you've gotten some ideas, and I hope you'll think about some of the ways that you can navigate through this. Now, one of the things, speaking of navigation, they have all these navigators, right? Some of them are kind of scary, aren't they?
Well, absolutely. And as from our industry standpoint, that was one of the aspects of the law that was the most troubling to us, is that you could have nonprofit agencies with no experience in the insurance industry whatsoever get a federal grant to come in and train people to explain your insurance for that had very limited experience and or education on what they were doing. And, you know, I think one of the big things that came out on that is they weren't requiring background checks on these people. So I could be sitting down in front of somebody, giving them all of my family information, social security numbers, dates of birth, address, everything. And, you know, this person could be a convicted felon.
Sure. Now, what about as far as signing up? Because those are the ones that come door to door to your house or meet in a place. Now, what about signing up actually on the website? Is that secure? I know a lot of people are concerned about that, Rock.
I don't know that I can give you an educated answer to that. Initially, the answer was no. They put steps in place, I believe, to try to make it a little more secure. The ultimate answer, though, you know, that's something that probably only Barack Obama probably knows the true answer.
Sure, could be. But it is kind of scary when you're looking at, although I do think in society we are eventually going to come to the conclusion that we have no right to privacy. I think that is something that is fast coming down the pike.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's an underlying problem in our society is that privacy has been all but eliminated.
Exactly. So a couple of questions. You know, one of the questions is we've had a good number of people enroll. I mean, the administration has been touting how they have really exceeded what they wanted. But the question is, how many people have enrolled that didn't have insurance and now have gotten insurance because of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, the answer is not very many. And as far as all of the statistics and studies that we're seeing coming in right now, the RAND Corporation has estimated that of the first 6 million to enroll, only 2 million were previously uninsured.
And a lot of these got dumped off of their insurance, and so they were used to having insurance. They wanted to have insurance, and so they went in and applied on the Affordable Care Act.
That's correct. There were people that already had an individual policy, but they could either now go into the federal exchange and receive a subsidy and receive help to help pay for that policy, or they were people who had been previously on an employer plan, and because of the Affordable Care Act, the employer has decided no longer to offer insurance, and now those employees are being dumped into the federal marketplace. Another interesting statistic is Express Scripts, who is a huge pharmacy management system. Their analysis is that of the more than 650,000 pharmacy claims that they've had for people with Affordable Care Act policies, that 423,000 of those were from people that had already had Express Scripts.
Wow.
So, you know, that's roughly about two-thirds. So
it hasn't really covered. So, you know, what do the people that can't afford health care? You know, I know I was reading in your thing, you know, if you answer yes to this, go this way. And if you answer no, you go down this way on your PowerPoint. But what does it mean for people that can't afford health care or don't get covered?
Well, you've got that individual penalty that is still lingering. Now, for the employer mandate, that is the one that they have suspended for 2014. So if you're a large employer, you have over 100.
Haven't they suspended it through the next election, in fact?
They have. And in fact, I just received an article. One of the conferences that I normally attend is called Benefit Selling Expo. Did not make it this year, but
they sent you their notes afterwards.
Yeah, I received the note, and one of the gentlemen who was previously in the Obama administration said that he anticipates the mandate will never go, the employer mandate will never go into effect.
Wow. So, and, you know, as far as employers, this 50 cap and everything, do you think it's, I mean, this is just your personal opinion, do you think it's going to affect the growth of our country?
Oh, absolutely. If you're, and I mean, it's a huge cost of doing business as far as providing benefits, and that was something that the employer traditionally made that decision on their own. Was it worth offering benefits in order to attract a certain level of employee? And quite frankly, it should be up to the employer to decide if they want to offer that or not. You know, it's their money that they're spending. You know, now you have the federal government who stepped in and said, well, you have to provide this level of coverage, or you're going to have to pay a fine. And the fine is significant. Now, it's $2,000 per employee. It was minus 30. Now it's minus 80. So if you have...
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to talk for a few more minutes. Okay, so it was 850 and now it's 80.
Well, it used to be
30,
50.
Okay.
It used to be employers that had over 50 employees. Then they got to subtract 30. So if you had 50 employees, you took 30 off, you paid for 20. So 2,000 times 20, so it's $400,000. Is that correct?
I don't know about that now. Let's see.
$40,000. I'm adding a zero in there. Okay, so you've got a $40,000 penalty. Well, for a relatively small business, you know, with 50
that's
employees,
that's
substantial. Well, now they've pushed the limit up to, well, if all, it went away for 2014.
Okay.
Okay, so now for 2015, they're saying now it's only going to apply to 100 employers or more, employers with 100 employees or more, and they're going to get to subtract 80.
So you're going to pay for 20,
right? If you got 100, you're going to pay for. But now you take a group that's got 3,500 employees.
Sure.
And you only get to subtract 80 off. If that employer is not offering benefits, you know, those are catastrophic penalties. You know, you're talking about, you know, penalty in the neighborhood of $7 million, and that's where it becomes very substantial.
Sure. So that's going to be another issue. And the other one I wanted to get to is when we have the government saying that this is how much the insurance companies are going to pay for an MRI, or this is how much they're going to pay for this, you don't have a choice. And am I right on that?
Yeah, and the government is not stepping down to tell the insurance carriers how much they can charge for an MRI. They're not stepping into the hospitals and saying this is how much you have to charge for an MRI. But what they've done is that by mandating how much the insurance carriers have to use of the premium dollars going in for benefits versus how much they can use for profit or, you know, other things, then what they've done is they've really regulated it to a point where now the insurance carriers have to be much, much more conscious of the contracts that they have with the providers. And it really, I think, creates a more adversarial approach between the insurance carriers and the hospitals and the providers as if there wasn't one, a bad enough one already. And ultimately, going back to the skinny networks and the insurance providers having fewer doctors and hospitals that accept your coverage, then the end user, you know, us being the ones that have the insurance, we're limiting our choices. We're limiting our choices on doctors, and we're limiting our choices on hospitals, which I think is bad for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, at one point, I think we were a capitalistic society, weren't we? We were consumers, and we were supposed to be able to choose and spend our money where we wanted to spend our money. This doesn't look like we can spend our money where we want, particularly where it comes to healthcare, Rock.
No, absolutely not. I mean, one of the things I think I mentioned to you was when Herman Cain was running for president, one of the speeches that he gave one time that made a lot of sense to me is he said, anytime there's government regulation and involvement in an industry, the cost of services increases and the accessibility of services decreases. And obviously this is a law that it is highly regulating the insurance industry. It shouldn't be called healthcare reform. It should be called healthcare regulation. And I mean, ultimately, I think that's what it's going to do, is it's going to increase costs and it's going to lower accessibility of services.
And that was not, of course, the premise when we started down this road.
Not at all. It was, you know, the name of the law that they
chose
is, well, and that was kind of even interesting under itself. You know, we used to know it as PPACA because it was the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Somewhere along the line, I guess they didn't care to protect the patients anymore. So they just started calling it the Affordable Care Act. I guess that was just a marketing idea. Yeah. But there's really not a lot of affordability in this law other than for a small segment of the people that can apply and qualify for the subsidies, or really, I guess we should call them advanced premium tax credits, because that's what they are, as they are an advanced premium tax credit for purchasing insurance.
Well, this, you know, this has been a fascinating conversation for me. I feel like I've gotten a lot of real information here today. And I, you know, I just be curious, futuristically, as the insurance companies have had to change to accommodate these new things, will there be more companies dropping out? Will only the biggest companies be left?
Yeah, I believe so. And that's already happened. You know, we had a provider in South Carolina that was called Carolina Care Plan. They were owned by MedMutual of Ohio, and you know, based off of the laws and the regulation, they decided to no longer operate in the state of South Carolina and essentially closed shop. They did sell their block of business to United Healthcare, so that those people that had Carolina Care Plan were not left without options. But it was an instance where a carrier operating in South Carolina elected to no longer do so. And that's happened a lot. You know, there was regulation back 15, 20 years ago where we went from having somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 50 health insurance providers to just a handful. And again, as regulation continues to come down the pipe, it's going to limit the opportunity for insurance carriers. And as you stated, it's going to be left with just a handful, and those handful are going to be the really big ones.
Yes, and we will not be consuming health care. We will be being told where we can get our health care. And one last question, and then I'll stop. You know, we always think about the pharmacies and the pharmacist and the pharmaceutical companies and finding all these great cures. Is this going to make it more difficult for them to progress and give us the best health care in the world? I mean, we always have had that. They've been on the verge of so many cures and so many things. Is this going to affect that, Rock?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's a very tough question to answer and try to look in a crystal ball. And obviously, the research and development dollars, the reason that this country, not just in that aspect, but as a whole, has thrived is because if you could research something and you could develop something, you could develop a product or a service, and you know, you could market that, then you stood to gain a lot from that.
You deserve the spoils.
You deserve the spoils.
Exactly.
And if someone comes in and tells you that, you know, no matter how innovative your product is or how innovative your service is, you can only make 15%. You know, then it's going to make it definitely more difficult. And, you know, that could certainly be the case with
research and development.
Research and development drugs. And, you know, that's a whole other topic of discussion about what's happening in the pharmacy industry. But, you know, a lot of these companies are no longer producing drugs that are really needed and vital for people's health because they're no longer profitable.
And therein runs a problem for all of us as we all age and get older, and so many people need a lot of medications. Here's what I say about healthcare: you got to take care of yourself. You better start being concerned about your own body and taking care of it, because we just don't know what's down the pike and what we're going to get.
Sure.
Would I be right on that, Rock?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that has happened in the marketplace that has been an upswing, and this is something that's been primarily initiated on the employer side of things, or wellness programs, where employers are putting incentives out there for their employees to live healthier lifestyles.
I know a lot of the hospitals are definitely going with these programs with their own employees.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that I don't think we touched on as part of the law is that they did, while they can no longer rate insurance based off of gender, they can no longer rate insurance based off of health insurance, they do allow a surcharge if you are a tobacco user. So if you're going through that exchange and you answer that you are a tobacco user, then your premiums are going to be 20% higher.
Wow. How about for obesity?
Don't have that on there yet. There's no weight scale.
Okay.
There's no weight chart on there yet. But
The keyword is yet, right?
Yet. Yeah. Yes.
So these are the things that they're going to be looking at, and as we go down this road, it certainly is going to be interesting to see. I certainly hope in sometime in the future we could have you back and see how things are coming and changing. This has been so informative, Rock.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.